Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Today's Carolla Classics is brought to you by LifeLock. Hotels are advertising daytime reservations for people seeking quiet, distraction-free places to work. But hackers can exploit lax hotel Wi-Fi security to steal your personal data. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day we put our information at risk on the internet, and you could miss certain threats by just monitoring your credit. But good thing there's LifeLock. LifeLock helps detect a wide range of identity threats, like your social security number for sale on the dark web. And if they detect your information has been compromised, they'll send you an alert. It's beautiful. We need it. It's LifeLock, right, Gio?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year. Go to LifeLock.com/Adam. That's LifeLock.com/Adam for 25% off.
Hello and welcome to Carolla Classics for November 14th, 2020. The show where we play some highlights from the Adam Carolla Show. Over 11 years of podcasting, we have a ton to pick from, but we got some really great clips for you right here. My name's Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show, and with me, as always, Carolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Joe. Happy belated birthday.
Well, thank you.
Of course, man. Before we get started with some clips, I want to remind everybody, just head over to geico.com. Get a quote. See how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. All right. Let's start it off. Let's start this clip off with one of my favorite guests that comes in. A Hall of Famer. Fitzdog himself. Greg Fitzsimmons.
Adam Carolla Show 536. This is featuring just Greg Fitzsimmons. It was a one-on-one. I believe it was done before the live show, but this isn't the one done from the car. Because there was a time they actually did a podcast from the car, which we'll eventually play. And they had part of it that aired on Greg's feed. But this is just Adam and Greg in studio. It's a short 50-minute one-on-one. And I found this nice chunk. This is from March of 2011. And it's the invention of Mangria, either number two or three, because Adam's invented it several times. This is before Mangria was actually a product, and he's going over with how he came up with it. And then also, we get Greg's airplane anecdote that's gross. Check it out.
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of people that are looking to be noticed and not noticed simultaneously. There's a version of this. There's a version of this where the guy has the real aggressive piercings, but then wants to know what you're staring at.
Yes.
When he's selling you a newspaper. There's all that. Like, notice me, look at me, everyone look at me, and then if you get caught looking at me, then I get to pass judgment at you looking at me. I mean, there's chicks walking around now. Sound like the old men up on the balcony over at the Muppets. But the chicks in the leggings. Now all the chicks are wearing the leggings.
Sure.
Which is just seriously... I mean, a pajama bottom is sort of a lateral move. Actually, that's a more modest move. This is essentially... A micron away from just being them. Like you can if there's an ingrown hair, you'll spot it on those leggings.
Oh, I can find the clitoris.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
You know, with one eye shut, I know. You're not going to be yelling at me later that I couldn't find the spot. I can see it from here. I'm 12 feet away.
Weird walking through the airport with that on. Would you say? Or are you cool?
Well, the airport to me is a place. If you're flying L.A. to Vegas, we all know, you know, it's 4 o'clock on a Friday. Mm-hmm. We know you're punching in around 7:30 tonight.
Sure.
You'll be done 3 a.m. You're gonna have a lot of singles.
Right.
All outfits go.
Right.
But if you're flying to Cleveland and you're wearing the paint-on pants there,
yes.
Then and here's what I just flew back from Tampa, and it's a perfect example. I'm in the window seat. I sit down. I'm tired as hell. And so I don't even notice that the woman next to me is attractive.
Mm-hmm.
Until I get up. I got to go to the bathroom. She gets up. We both walk to the bathroom. And I notice, because by the way, she's wearing a sweater, you know, dressed properly. Mm-hmm. And we get to the bathroom, and she has taken her sweater off, and she's rocking a 34 Double D.
Mm-hmm.
Her face is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, and she's charming. We're waiting mm-hmm. to go into the bathroom. And so now I've got to rip a deuce bad. I'm cramping up. So mm-hmm. I say, why don't you go first?
Sure, yeah.
She says, no, you go first. And I go, no, really, you go first. And she goes, well, you're in the window seat, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
So now I'm like, great. I go in there, and all I can do is let some gas out. I urinate to try to free up some space around the bladder.
Mm-hmm.
And I know now that there's no way, because if I sit down, I'm not coming up for 12 minutes. And there's not the double bathroom. This is the one between first class and coach. So
right.
There's only one. She's
right.
Waiting. She's next.
Waiting. Yeah.
And so I release as much gas as I can without sharting.
Mm-hmm.
I turn the knob up high on the wind thing, and luckily mm-hmm. they've got one of those stick deodorant things is up.
Mm-hmm.
I get out of there in less than 2.5 minutes, so she knows that I didn't squat.
Right. Do you ever put the toilet seat up to cover your tracks?
I did exactly that. Left the toilet seat up.
I will sometimes, even when I put the toilet seat down to shit, will put it back up before I leave.
Absolutely.
Because it's a tell.
Yeah, and then the woman pulls it down, sits, and it's warm.
Yeah. Well, but when a dude leaves a bathroom and the toilet seat is down, there are three scenarios. A, he shit, which we don't want them to know.
Yeah.
B, he didn't shit. He took a piss, but the fuck didn't have the decency to put the seat up.
Yeah.
He just pissed on the seat.
Can't
or
C, the third scenario.
He peed off in the sink.
Just
thought of that one.
Got it. That's it.
Either way, seat down, tell. Leave.
And the opposite of that being, you do drop a deuce, you
mm-hmm.
own it, I'm going
right.
to leave the seat down, now I'm going to wash my hands. The bathroom is so small that as you're drying your hands, sprinklets of water land on the seat.
Yes.
Now you're busted for pissing in the seat.
Right.
You didn't do that.
I cannot tell you the amount of times I've done this. I like to kick my shoes off on the 5-6 hour flight.
Naturally.
And then when it comes time to make the baton death march down into the header, usually somewhere around hour 3 or 4, I'm ready to get rid of a couple Bloody Marys that I've socked away in first or business. And I head down the thing, and I'm in my socks. And I never kick my shoes back on, normally because I'm drunk and I can't find one of them. But I assume they'll turn up somewhere before
and you're gonna
I get
a cramp trying to get it on anyway.
Right. So I go down, and then I walk in that bathroom, and I notice there is, it looks like a small island chain, and you're flying over it on a recon mission. And now I'm on the ball of 1 foot with the weight shifted to the outside,
yeah.
and the other one I'm standing on the heel, because those are the two dry marks that don't
yes.
have what could be piss.
Unidentified.
You know, it'd be a nice floor for in there. I'm not quite sure how to work it out, but they do it all the time in restaurants. They have that sort of grate you stand
grate.
On.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cedar.
Something that's a little bit off the whatever, so that whatever you I don't care if there's a dude beating off looking at me from down below and the luggage thing or whatever, but would be nice to have a little air coming through there. But
I think so. And you know, in the toilet I went in this time, not only did I not get to drop the deuce I so badly needed to drop, the toilet seat had it was a bench style. They've got these bench style ones now, and I'm a big fan of the early release on the flight.
Mm-hmm.
For years, I would get a little anxious on flights, and so as soon as it took off, straight into the bathroom, work one out,
right.
sit down, fall asleep.
Right.
It got to where I would get an erection as the altitude went up.
Really?
Like it was like a Pavlovian thing with my penis.
Really,
he knew it was time
into the
toilet.
Oh, okay.
Which is tough. Also, got to line it first, because if you don't, it's going to stick to the side. There's no water in there. You're not dropping the load into the water. You're
mm-hmm.
dropping it on a dry. There's air being sucked out of it, so
mm-hmm.
it's hyper dry,
mm-hmm.
and you will splatter the side and have to then go in with toilet paper to get it out. So you line it with toilet paper first.
Let me get this straight, and I'm not judging in any way, shape, or form, but you masturbate before early
in the flight
in the flight on. Now let's just say you're going Burbank to Phoenix. Trying to figure out your beat-off range.
No, we're talking...
What about going to Denver?
That's probably the under-over. And it depends on if it's morning or evening.
I'm a gambling man.
If it's morning, then it's not going to happen, because I probably have a show that night, and I like to go in with a full bag.
Right.
If I'm coming home and it's early morning, and I
uh-huh.
know that I had a show at... I wasn't home till 2 in the morning. I got picked up at 5 a.m.
Right, right.
I need to sleep those few hours.
Mm-hmm.
That's my sleeping pill. I go in and I release.
Yeah.
And then I go back to my seat, and I'm walking down the aisle, and...
And when you say your sleeping pill, you mean that action helps you sleep. You don't actually ingest it.
You know, I had not thought that probably
you gotta
would
watch
help.
Out how you watch the phrasing
yeah,
on that. So you're saying that, Jesus Christ. And by the way, When women hear guys talk this way, they are fucking disgusted.
Disgusted.
They're disgusted. And it is so weird. And it's always good, too, when you hear a woman talking about something you've done, maybe a baker's dozen times, and she's fucking repulsed by it, and you have to join her in being repulsed. Like, she'll
you mean
be like,
she's describing to friends what you've done?
I had a woman once say, I was driving along, and I looked out, looked through my window. I was sitting up high, and this guy was like in a sports car, and he was masturbating in his car. And then she paused. She's like, what kind of sick mental patient? And it's like, I don't know. I mean, you never know. People have their reasons. I was trying to defend him a little bit because it's something
let's
that
just I... say you're living in the psych ward, sweetheart.
Right, right. And she's like, yeah, it's disgusting. And then, like, I was going, yeah. You didn't get a look at this guy, though, did you? But
meanwhile, women will go off to the sex shop, and they'll all come home with dildos, with rabbit ears on them, and it's fun, and it's beautiful, and it's empowering for them.
Never anything in the bathroom of an airplane. Now,
no,
how do you feel? How do you feel about your fellow passengers? Now we know that they would all just throw up into that bag that's in the seat in front of them,
probably
if they knew they were using a bathroom after you beat off in it. And I've wrapped my mind around this stuff because you travel as much as we do. You fucking throw. You know, you do that move where you're. You know, it's all hell. It's all hell. I'm going, you know, I got a 6:25 flight out of LAX tomorrow. It's, you know, pick up at 5 a.m. It's like, I'll get to the hotel. It'll be an hour before the gig. I'll throw myself down on the comforter that was put there in 1987. I'll turn on the TV. It'll be the gentleman's whatever. And I'll be lying there in essentially 20 years of some guy, you know, man batter. You know, I mean, I've come to grips with it. I understand.
If CSI busted into the room and they tested that comforter,
there would be a pentagram that would light up like a Christmas tree, written in semen, on that comforter. And I understand it. I don't like to think about it, but I understand it. And God knows what's going on in the bathroom. But I try not to think about it. But other people are freaked out by that shit.
They are, but here's what they have to understand. I could care less. I almost like that they might find out, and one of the things is, like, the bathroom is so small that I lean forward, and I have my hand on the wall, and I have my forehead pressed against the wall.
Is that what happened here, or is that just male pattern baldness?
My hair fell out.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if it's from
that
activity.
Joke. That's like a bit that you're doing. Like, I'm telling you about masturbating in a plane with my head against the wall, and you feel you feel you need to put another layer on top of that?
I like a little mirth worked into this very serious political conversation we're having.
I just feel like I'm sitting here telling the most embarrassing thing in the world, and you're like, hold on a second. Wait, stand still. So then I come out of there, and I notice when I look in the window that now I have a red square in the middle of my forehead.
Sure.
I got to think is there someone smart enough to see me walking down the aisle and go, that guy was just leaning into one in the bathroom?
Yeah, that's interesting because you can't really stand up, and you have to get the right angle.
You got to get the right angle because whatever angle your penis is from your stomach, which by the way changes as you get older, you know. It's like a sundial.
Oh,
when you remember at 18, it's literally due north.
Right.
And they say that an old man, when he gets an erection, it's like pointing down.
Prove it. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying. Here's the thing. Basically, everything is being pulled toward the earth. Your earlobes, your ball sack, your eyelids, you know, and why not your cock, even with a boner. The thing, and this is something interesting, because it's something I'd like to teach my son. Which is, first off, do not get married to the lube. She's a mistress that will bite you in the ass.
Absolutely.
You'll be up there. You'll get desperate. You'll reach for some hand sanitizer or something. Next thing you know, your cock's going to be on fire. So do not get married to the lube. And then secondly, don't get married to one position. Like, I'm going to do a thing where I train my son where it's going to be like, you know, Talladega Nights. But I'm literally going to give my 30-second head start with his pants around his ankles beating off, and then I'm going to unleash a Kodiak bear.
Got it.
And I'm saying, you better get one off before that bear catch. I'll give you 100 yards, but you better get one off before that bear catch. I want you ninja-like. I want you to do it standing up. I want you to do it at 30,000 feet. If that plane could be in a fucking nosedive heading into the third tower, and I want one squeezed off. Yeah. You understand?
Bronco,
I want that kind
bull,
of training.
Get on the bull.
Yeah, I don't want that thing where you have to be stretched out, and your toes need to be pointed toward Mecca, and you need your roommate's T-shirt just so. Like, I don't need, because that's just going to hold you back.
It's going to hold you back, and it's going to ruin your lovemaking, because unless you can replicate that exact situation, you will have been trained into only being able to orgasm in the most anally retentive my way. And your way, what you're saying is, girl's walking home from a bar. It's dark. You're walking behind her.
Right.
Are you going to be able to run, tackle, come, and get out of there
right.
quickly and effectively?
Right.
Have you thought of writing a children's book?
Well, I did do a sort of Jersey Shore thing, which is run, tackle, come. You know, they have the tan. Let's see, what do they have? They have the laundry tan and weight room or something.
Yeah.
They have the RTC. So run, tackle, come. And that's the words we live by at the Corolla House. Run, tackle, come. Run, tackle,
run,
come.
Tackle,
and it's just
go.
right up top, the old man. And that's what we do. No, the position thing, Greg, now see, this is two guys who like to hand out advice even over this shit.
No pun intended here.
But what happens is guys start beating off, I would say, average age 13 and a half, 14 years, whatever. That's the average age the guy starts beating off. The average age a guy not loses his virginity, but starts getting it with regularity. Like, hey, I can do it whenever, in any position, whatever, is probably on average about 4 years from that time. Sometimes it doesn't happen until the guy's 19 or 20. Sometimes it happens at 16 or 15. But for the most part, there's a good 4 years between the time you start at yourself and the time some chick is dumb enough to let you do it wherever, whenever.
Like college.
Yeah, like college. And like I said, guys might lose their virginity in high school and blah, blah, blah. But just it's that I moved out of my house. I'm living away from home. I have my own apartment. That kind of I can do it. You know, I'm not sneaking one away in stepmom's Honda or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That period of time can be a good 4, 5, 6 years. In that period of time, you will have done it to yourself several hundred thousand times. And if you do it just in one position several hundred thousand times, then when it comes time to get with the chick and all of a sudden you're trying it out in doggy position,
yeah,
your cock's confused.
Yeah, it is. And, even now,
it's a ball bender.
It's, if you, that's one way to mix it up. I think that if you, at 44, mm-hmm, can't challenge yourself, it's also, it's ongoing. I mean, it's got to start there. You're right. Get your kid thinking creatively early on. There's options. Play action pass.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you get to be 44,
run,
I think it's.
Run, tackle, come. Hold on. I'm going to have, by the way, Elvis, for everyone in the Memphis Mafia, had that lightning bolt that said, taking care of business.
Yeah.
TCB?
Yeah.
I'm just going to have a lightning bolt. It's just RTC on it. Me and my son will both wear it around. It'll be our thing.
Just a girl crying with a puddle next to her.
Yeah, we'll work it out.
So I think as a middle-aged man, I'm rediscovering that need to get creative with it. And I'm, mm-hmm, not talking about going and buying a fur glove from one of those shops.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just talking about going overhand. I'm talking about laying on my stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Work.
Sure.
Am I going too deep
no,
into this?
No, but when you're in the bathroom, and especially when you're in there and you're sort of first in line, so to speak, and you know that everyone else on the flight is now going to use the bathroom, that even if you did a decent enough job mopping up after yourself, you know that if anyone who entered that bathroom with the knowledge that Fitzsimmons took care of business in here would be completely repulsed by it. Some would demand the plane land in Cincinnati and you'd be tossed off. Others would want a refund.
Did you say tossed off?
Others would want me. I'd just try to get a free drink out of it,
Well,
look, if I can get a Michelob Ultra, we're cool. But
if this
how
sounds,
do you feel morally about it?
This is going to sound sick, and honestly, that's most of the joy of it.
Really?
Yeah, I like to know
do you
that.
Do you hate your fellow man?
I don't. I find my fellow man to be too conservative and uptight, and I don't think that orgasms are something we should be ashamed of. It's like literally without orgasms, we would
sitting in your orgasm.
It's not sitting. Look, I told you, I line it, I flush it. I got my forehead pressed against the wall for correct.
Most folks, though,
I'm not Peter North, Adam.
I know, but most folks use their sleeve or their foot or a paper towel to open the bathroom door. They're so freaked out about someone else's germs, and that's just urine.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying here?
I think urine is much dirtier than semen. Semen is actually, it's protein. It's very healthy for you. Urine and feces, you can get real stomach disorders from. Cum, unless they're opening it with their vagina, there's no downside.
Urine is sterile, by the way. Say, yeah, but still.
Yeah, but still.
Perfect. Well, let's reenact that one more time because it's a perfect. For those of you who want to know how to use my "yeah, but still" argument, this would be a perfect example of how to do it. You work in the
Adam,
semen.
Semen is completely pure. I mean, if you're talking about dirtiness, you can get a stomach virus from urine or fecal matter.
Urine is sterile.
Yeah, but still.
See, perfect. That was so
good.
No
beat, right? A lot of guys have put the beat in there. I like to clip it.
No, you jump right on it. Yeah. We'll take a quick break. Back with the formerly great Greg Fitzsimmons. Ah, Sledgehammer. Thanks to our good partners over at Sledgehammer Wine. They make a lovely wine. They like drinking wine, not talking about it. It's a man's wine. It's robust. I drink it on a nightly basis. I'm semi-proud to say. Big and bold, and it's the kind of thing a man can drink with confidence. It's no sippy wine. It's the bottle itself is 20 pounds of glass. It's insane.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a good, strong, solid wine. And you can check out sledgehammerwine.com and follow them on Facebook. And also, for a limited time only, get a discount and free shipping. And again, that's a big thing because the bottle's a metric ton. Limited time only, you get a discount and free shipping. Go to sledgehammerwine.com and use the promo code ACE. These guys are good. They make a nice, reasonably priced bottle of wine. I shit you not, I drink it on a nightly basis. It's solid stuff.
Can I ask you a question? You're talking about wine.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
You're not a douche that gets the pour me a sip, and while I stare at it and people at the other tables are trying to flag down the waiter.
Let me tell you what kind of how unwind douchey I am. First off, I invented something called Mangria, and this is a lot of like what you'd left on the Southwest flight on the toilet seat.
Yeah.
I will sometimes, when I'm just down to my last little sippy cup of wine, like at the bottom of the bottle, I'll pour it in the glass, and it'll just fill up a quarter of the glass, and I'll go, well, fuck that. I can't catch a buzz off that, and I'll go grab some vodka or anything else and just dump it in there, and it sort of turns this sort of pale red, and whatever it is, I'm catching a buzz. Like
You're not worried about losing the high end of the wine?
No, I don't care if it's got legs. I just want my legs to wobble when I'm walking up to the bedroom at night. And last night, I was out of Sledgehammer. And we have it here at the shop. And I don't know if the Sledge folks are going to want to hear this or not, but I'll tell you the truth. I had another bottle of Pinot Noir. And Sledgehammer, I don't think, makes a Pinot Noir. And I had a little bit at the bottom of a bottle that I had from 2 days earlier, and I dumped it in there. But I happened to bring home some Sledgehammer, and I was standing at the kitchen, and I had a glass that had an inch of other wine at it, and now a new bottle of Sledgehammer. I just opened it up and just poured the rest on top.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
They're not going to be happy about that, the Sledgehammer people.
It's good for what ails you. What can I say? And I'm not a snob. And the rest of it was all Sledgehammer, but I ain't a snob. And by the way, to me, wine is for two things. It's to not taste bad and to catch a buzz. I don't have to be whisked away
to some
exotic locale. You know what I mean?
Well, I don't drink anymore, but it seems like the thing I miss is that a good bottle of wine with the right entree can enhance the entree, correct?
That is correct, but I ain't eating at night. I'm just drinking.
You're just drinking.
I'm just drinking.
What about the guy at the restaurant who does that? Is there ever like an excuse to do that? Because say you didn't like it. Are you really going to send it back? And then what are they going to do with that bottle? Does that become the house wine?
Yeah.
Even though we've now proven it's shit?
Yeah, it's interesting, and I would never send it back. I don't sniff the cork. My biggest fear is that I'm not doing something I should be doing. I should be swirling it around or looking. I mean, no one knows. No one can tell a thing. I went on a wine. We did a wine tasting thing. We went to, when we were in Napa, we went to the Sledgehammer. Their cousin's wine farm. Let's put a wine farm vineyard. And we went and tasted some really high-end stuff. And I noticed that some of it was in oak barrels, and then some of it was in stainless steel barrels. Here's the other thing, too. Find a picture of that. It's one of these things. It is funny, but here's the conversations I find myself having throughout my life. We're walking through this warehouse that has oak barrels and stainless steel barrels, 55-gallon barrels, up to the rafters. And the only thing, as a former builder, I'm sort of looking at these things, and there's a picture. And by the way, you're looking at 14 feet, but it just keeps going.
Yeah.
It goes another 30 feet up in the air. And we'll find a couple pictures. And you see all those barrels. They're not strapped down. They're not tied down. There's nothing going on. It's literally just gravity keeping them in place.
It looks like Building 4 in Japan.
Right. And then another... Oh, you just lost the Affleck gig. Another like sort of grate goes on top, and then more barrels, and it's almost like Legos that don't snap together. Legos did not snap together, if you look off to the background, the back of those vats, it goes up 10 barrels high, and as far as the eye can see. And I say at a certain point, I say, what's holding those barrels in place? And the guy says, it's just weight and gravity. And I said, we're right along the San Andreas Fault, are we not? And he said, sure are, right in the middle of earthquake country. And I said, is anyone ever thought about, strapping down the barrels in case there was an earthquake? Seems like you'd have quite a disaster. And he said, as a matter of fact, in 94, down at the Tustin Vineyard, just down the way there, they took out, I think it was over 5,500 barrels. It was a complete disaster. Lost almost $10 million worth of product.
Jesus.
And then I do the,
how much these straps
cost
again?
That's what I'm talking about. Someone make a Home Depot run and grab a couple bungee cords? And the guy's just like, anyway, over here, this is where the fermentation product, and I'm going, hold on. I'm not done with the part about strapping these fucking barrels down. And it is an interesting part of life where the guy looks at me, he goes, yes, we're in earthquake country. Yes, funny you bring this up, because this exact scenario happened at another vineyard and they lost millions of dollars in money with barrels just broken open and strewn about. Plus, you'd be crushed if you were standing anywhere near one of those. But moving on with the tour.
Yeah.
And I thought, at the point, if my wife were with me, she would tug on my sleeve and say, stop being an asshole. I don't think that makes me an asshole.
Well,
I'm trying to save them 200,000 barrels.
How long did it take us in between a countless tons and tons of crude oil spilling into the Gulf until moratorium over, get back to it?
Yeah,
specs different, no
even
laws.
Even a double-hulled tanker took, good 50 years of dumping oil in there before someone said, maybe put a second hole in there so it doesn't all spill out.
Yeah.
It is insane. Oh, so while we were doing this wine testing and tasting, and I can't tell shit, and I told the guy, I said, here's what you should do. He takes his little goblet, it's not a goblet, it's a little beaker.
Is it the Hobbit tour?
Yeah, so he takes his beaker thing and he drops it, and he pulls out the bunghole, the cork and the bunghole, so he's always good for a snicker from the crowd. He drops it in there and he puts his thumb over it and he gives you a little sample. And he kind of goes down the hall a little bit. He kind of goes in between the barrels. He goes, let me give you some of the taste. And he gives you the oak one, and you swirl it around. He says, you see, it's fruity. It's a little nutty. You can taste a little of the oak. You can taste the oak characteristics in it. And it's a little bit of a charcoal-y flavor in it. That's from the oak that's coming. It comes out, a little sugary flavor from the oak. And everyone just stands there and nods their head and goes, yeah, this is the guy. Aaron just nods her head, and he goes, now, and this is what I'd do if I were him, now let me give you a taste from the stainless steel one so you can tell the difference. And then I'd walk down the same thing, and I'd come back again, and I'd go, now you see it's a little tinnier, and there's a little metallic flavor to it, and they'd go, oh, absolutely, with notes of whatever, and they go, no, and then I'd stop in the middle, I'd go, pulled it from the same oak barrel, Dickweed. Now it's you guys assholes.
Yeah.
Because it would work every fucking time. Everyone would just nod.
Well, that's the thing about Americans, and I would say everyone around the world, we collect things like, I know wine, I know cigars. Mm-hmm. I know, I get a certain magazine, Gentleman's mm-hmm. Quarterly Magazine. I live in the suburbs. There's like a collection of things mm-hmm. you don't need to know, but you learn them so that you can be a part of what's considered a higher group up
right.
than the other group. You know,
yes.
If you're a wino, you may only learn what's a good corner to beg on to get the wine, but you know that information.
Right.
Then you become a higher level alcoholic,
right.
and you start to learn a bar that serves good happy hour drinks.
Right.
Now you step up again,
and
now you're standing between barrels that are made of steel and made out of oak.
All you have to know is 10% more than anyone else in the room, or even 1% more than anyone else in the room, and you get to be the expert,
you're
even
the
if you're Dillweed.
Gio was right. That was gross. Also, Gio, it's kind of interesting how much of a history Greg has with Mangria, whether he likes it or not.
In studio the day Adam describes inventing it, Adam trying to get him to drink it, all the fans freaking out, not aware that Greg has some lax, let's say, rules about his sobriety that for him to discuss. And then it came up again a second time where then Greg got super serious, but he was also joking, and the fans also freaked out about it a little bit as well.
Yeah, created some of our most awkward or uncomfortable moments. And Mangria, the actual product, I remember it came to fruition, pardon the pun, about a year later, and we had the first time we all had it, we had a big keg of it, and we just had it on tap at our studio, and we thought, all right, let's just try this, and before the show, and we just all got destroyed. We had
pulled
no
a fluffy.
Idea. Yeah, exactly. Oh, we pulled a fluffy. That's I think that is the official term. We had no idea what was going to happen.
You know what you're getting into. Yeah, Mangria is intense. The Brosé is my favorite. It is one of the most interesting inventions in alcohol, I think, ever. It's crazy that Adam, something that he first talked about on Loveline, mixing some hard alcohol with his wine, we didn't have enough wine left over, became something else he did 10 years later, and then a few years later after that, and then actually became something he sold. It's crazy.
Yeah, and make sure to check out Corolla Drinks for all of his future alcoholic products.
Endeavors,
yes. All right, let's get going with another clip, but first I want to remind everybody about Tommy John. You love Tommy John, right, Gio?
I love Tommy John so much. I'm a convert, as they say. You don't have customers, you have converts. Unlike Adam, I've thrown out all my old stuff. I don't care how much it costs. It's rags. I only wear Tommy John, and that's how it's going to be forever.
Yeah, and we always talked about how it's like having your own on-body AC, but
keeping you cool all summer, keeping you warm all winter.
That's what I'm trying to tell everybody. Farmer's Almanac predicts winter is going to be brutally cold this year, but we can fight cold with Cozy. Yeah, that Tommy John, it'll keep you warm, as Gio said. So this year, give the gift of comfort to everyone on your list and yourself with Tommy John men's and women's loungewear. No risk with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. And if you order now to make sure your gifts arrive by the holidays, all you gotta do is just go to TommyJohn.com/Adam, and you'll get $25 off site-wide. That's $20 off for a limited time only at TommyJohn.com/Adam. TommyJohn.com/Adam. See site for details. It makes incredible gifts for other people, or if you want to treat yourself. Now let's get going to another clip. This is also from 2011, and it features Joe Rogan.
It does. Adam Carolla Show 544. As you mentioned at the top of the show, there's so many clips to choose from, so I had a completely different idea of what this episode would be, and then I found this Rogan clip. Like, how come we haven't played this one? And we played the part where he came on later, and Allison talked to him about hunting for several minutes because she was super interested in it with her own personal views, and that was from like 2014. Back here in 2011 on 544, which is actually from April 11th, 2011, aired the following day, it's Rogan, Allison Rosen, Brian Bishop. They actually get into Joe's idea that he's going to start hunting. It hadn't happened yet. And it's very early into the Rogan's podcast life and world, and you get to hear about when he moved to Denver, the ill-fated move, and then coming back. That was still a recent event at this time. It's just very cool to hear where Rogan was in 2011 and where this whole podcast world was. And this clip surmises it pretty well. Check it out.
All right, Allison Rosen, let's see. You're going to do news.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Rogan is hanging around out there. Why don't we just walk Joe in? He can sit down and hang out and do the news with us. While Joe's walking in, I'll tell everyone that we're going to be at the Universal City Walk Thursday night. Andy Dick's going to be on the show. We're also going to be streaming Thursday's show for free. That's right, on ustream.com/acebroadcasting. So that's cool.
Ustream.tv.
Ah, yes. Don't ever correct. Yes. Nice job. I'm going to be at the Orpheum Theater in Phoenix. That is April 22nd. And the Will Turn out here, May 21st. Jimmy Kimmel's going to come up and say hi on that show. Joe Rogan, always good to see you, my brother.
Good to see you too, brother. What's going on?
I like you because you're a thinker, Joe.
Thank you.
And
I had an Adam Carolla moment today.
What happened?
I was thinking about you. My card got stolen. They stole the number.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to call American Express because they sent me an email. Did you buy all this stuff at Saks Fifth Avenue? And all. Mm-hmm. So I had to call them. And when I called them, it took forever to talk to a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, this is something that Adam Carolla would rant about.
Yeah, well.
You know, I had to go through the automated press one.
Right, right. And it is one of these things where we think everything is a step forward. Like everything, we think everything that's newer is better. Like you know, when you go into these stores and now they're all these just sort of discount big box stores and they go, our salespeople don't get commission. That means there's no salespeople to be found.
Yeah.
You remove the commission out of the store or out of life. You have essentially an empty store.
You have an empty commie big box.
You have an empty commie big box, and you go and what's the difference between the Mitsubishi and the Sony? And the guy's like,
he's reading the label.
Let me go back and ask. So, it's always, by the way, whatever you have in the back, bring it out front because I gotta go check on.
What's
that.
The positive of that? That they're not as pushy? Is that what it's supposed to
I
be?
Think
yeah,
deal,
that's not like Guitar Center. Probably
the deal is
is
not
that what they do at Guitar Center.
Oh, it's like a car dealership for guitars.
I bought 12 tambourines last time I was there, and I didn't play the tambourine. I just like I said, the
and
guy
you already
was so
had
good.
24 at home.
The guy was
the guy
so good. I had 8 in the trunk of my car, and I walked out of that. I went in there trying to get a DAT recorder. I walked out with 14 tambourines. Tambourines.
They
I
have
nothing
quotas.
I could do.
Did you go at the end of the month? That's tambourine.
The guy
timing.
Was the guy. Well, first off, he told me he's tambourine dealing days. So that's
American made tambourines.
Right, right. And yeah, he also said these ones weren't made in China. And then he had a special needs kid, and he was trying to make his quota. And the next thing you know, I was just jingling all the way out there. So Joe Rogan, I've been following you in your podcast, and I was thinking about you today, knowing that you're going to be on the show, and I was thinking about if the podcast, the format of the podcast favors guys like yourself, guys who like ideas better than jokes. I'm guessing you like ideas better than jokes.
Yeah, I mean, even in my stand-up, it's not really that much. It's not really jokes.
I mean,
there's punchlines, but it's really stories and setups and ideas.
Right.
And yeah, the jokes are sort of there to pump up the idea. You know, they're not really the foundation of it. Some guys, their whole act is just a series of jokes, which is great. Nothing wrong with that. It's just
not great, but
it's not me.
It's all right.
For some guys, it's great. Like Mitch Hedberg.
I was about to say, like,
yeah.
Stephen Wright, Mitch Hedberg, that's fine. I
it's
could
only
sit
a few
and
of those guys,
jokes.
Though. I mean, they're masters at that one particular type of comedy.
I had my wife's friend said, oh, I was listening to a podcast. You said something so funny the other day. And I said, what I say? And she said, you were talking to this gal. She was like 5'1", 140 pounds. And she was feeling down about a relationship. And then
Yolanda.
And then before you ended your conversation, when you're hanging up, you just muttered into the mic, keep your chins up. And she thought that was hysterical. And I said, eh. And she said, why don't you think that's funny? And I said, it's a joke. And she said, but it's funny. And I said, yeah, but it's not an idea. It's just a joke. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I like jokes.
I like them too, but I feel like, I feel like you've done no work. Or people won't remember it. I don't know. An idea is important. Like, an idea can change something or do something or has something behind it. The joke is sort of the cotton candy, the empty calories.
The frosting.
Yeah, it's the frosting. It's like, it's fun, but it's not real sustenance. You know what I'm saying?
I do know what you're saying. Yeah.
All right. All right. So you feel like the podcast, I guess, if I'm not putting words in your mouth, is a format where you can exchange ideas and get these things across, and it just suits that more than being on stage even would.
It's different, you know, and when you're on stage, you have to make people laugh. With the podcast, you don't necessarily. I mean, laughs come and laughs go, and sometimes there's no laughs for an hour where you're just talking about crazy shit, you know. It doesn't have to fit into a very particular format.
There's a sense of urgency that that a live audience will create that has thus essentially created the late night talk show format. Every late night talk show starts off with the same edict, which is, we're going to do something different. We're going to hang out. We're not going to be one of those prompter jockeys. No monologue. No, I mean, they'll be very conversational. Hang back, talk, you know. The guest stuff's not going to be all scripted, and it's not going to be overproduced. And then they all end up going the exact same direction, because when you put 250 people in front of you, and you don't hear anything out of them for a 25 Mississippi, you go back after that show and go, somebody write some jokes, put them on a cue card, let's get going, baby. I'll clip that tie on, let's get this thing moving.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why they end up going that direction.
Yeah. It's not the only direction, though. I mean, to do it like this, I mean, your podcast, doing your podcast is one of the reasons why I decided to do my own. Because it's such a fun thing to do, just to be able to sit down and have a conversation and not worry about people's attention span. And it's fascinating to listen to. I love listening to podcasts. That format is great for background stuff while you're working. It's great for driving in your car. It's great for going to the gym.
Right.
And that's something where a talk show would be terrible for.
Right.
You know, you don't want to hear some stupid 5-minute conversation about some movie that you don't give a fuck about, and some guy who's just got some pre-planned out ideas and jokes and little stupid stories he's going to tell, and then boom, he's gone, and next thing you know, there's commercials playing.
Right.
That's terrible for the gym or for your car.
Well, you know, I was saying that to somebody that the earbuds are very intimate. Like, if you think about the being up in the bleachers of a live show, or even being at a club where there's 400 people in the club, that's not that intimate, or especially being in a theater. But you put the earbuds in, and now it's just you and Joe Rogan, or you and fill in the blank, and it's sort of intimate. Like, now you're speaking to that person, and that person could be sitting in a subway car, could be at work, or could be just walking their dog, but it's you and them.
Yeah, and the connection that you have to those people in the real world is really different than anything else I've ever done before. Like, the people that come out to see me because of the podcast, they're way more fanatical. They buy tickets way in advance, and it's like most of my audience now, like I'd say like 80 to 90% are podcast people.
Yeah.
They're podcast fans, which is just completely different than just 6 months ago.
It's been a really interesting journey, because when people started podcasting, everyone wanted to know, well, how's this going to work? How's it going to work? How are you going to make money? What are you going to do? And I think there's way too much of that in life. Like, you don't want your kid going, well, how's it going to work? What are you going to do? When am I going to get paid? How am I going to get paid? When am I going to get paid? It's like, just start doing it and focus on doing a good job. And as far as the part where these guys, and I'm in this group, have been filling these clubs and theaters because of the podcast, that's some kind of weird secondary ancillary thing that no one really thought of.
Yes.
You know, we always just thought, well, I guess we could sell some commercials or maybe subscriptions or blah, 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 or do a fundraiser or something like that. But no, you can actually get paid because you can mention that you're going to be at the City Walk or at the Orpheum Theater, and more people will come out, buy a ticket, and sit there in front of you, and thus that can be your payment.
Do you have a preference for doing it in front of a live audience or doing it like this?
It's weird, but I like them both. I like the energy of the live audience, but I don't think I would like it 5 days in a row. And then I like the intimacy of being able to sit here and not have that pressure of, you know, say something stupid, make a chins joke, you know?
Yeah.
And
the first time I did a live one was yours.
Oh, it was?
The one when, we did it in Irvine. And
right.
I was like, wow, this is weird. You know, it's strange. You know, I feel like I should be doing stand-up. But I didn't want to do my stand-up because I'm working on a new special, and I didn't want my material to get out on the net, you know, before it already is gonna. But, you know, it does with YouTube. I mean, no matter what you do, your shit gets out there. If you want to find my bits, you can find them.
How does that... So, for me, I guess it's one of these answers of, like, how much do you love Thai food? Well, I like Thai food. Do you want to eat it five nights a week? Right. No. I thought you loved Thai food. I do, but I just want to mix it up a little Mexican every once in a while, you know?
Even stand up. You know, for me, I love the fact that I do a bunch of different things. I love staying home sometimes and writing and not saying a word. Sometimes I like going and doing stand up. Sometimes I like going and doing the UFC. You know, I love like UFC weekends because I do stand up on Friday night and then the fights are Saturday night. So I'll MC the weigh-ins on Friday night and then I'll do the show after the weigh-ins. And then Saturday night is the UFC. So for me, it's like this mixture where nothing gets boring.
Are those guys being weighed, or do the Wayans brothers have a new show? Because I'm confused.
The weigh-ins.
That's a joke. Two
words. Still means the same thing to me. See, now that's what I would say if there was an audience.
Oh, it's
please,
a good one,
dear God, make it the Wayans brothers
but
have
it's a
new
good one.
Show. Well, it's yours. Go ahead and use it.
I can't.
If Mencia doesn't steal it from you.
The weigh-ins have always been nice to me. I cannot joke
it's
about
like
them.
It's like a little podcast gift bag.
Yeah.
You walk out with that.
With jokes. That's fucking awesome.
Well, I completely agree. And there's a picture of Joe speaking to Randy Couture, the natural.
He's fighting again at 48 years old. How crazy is that?
Jesus
Do you remember
Christ.
When we were kids, when you were 38, you were fucking done?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You were done, man.
No.
You know, boxers? There was
all...
38, you were sad. 36 was how old Larry Holmes was when he fought Tyson. Do you remember that feeling? Like, poor Larry.
Yeah.
Poor Larry.
Right.
Now Bernard Hopkins is fucking 46.
I know.
And winning.
And
you know?
And it's insane because he's, I don't know, fighting light heavyweight now, whatever he is, but he fought in middleweight or super middleweight for all those years.
Yeah.
And people do not realize that. Maybe you can win a marathon at age 40, but you sure as fuck ain't going to win the 100-meter dash at age 40.
Right.
And Bernard Hopkins was a 42-year-old that was killing everyone in the 100 meters.
Yeah.
That's because, you know, heavyweight, all right, you can do a Larry Holmes where you kind of lumber around and try to load up on one big shot and, you know, what have you. Not Larry Holmes, but George Foreman.
Right.
But if you're fighting at 164 pounds or whatever he was fighting at that age, that's insane.
Very
the
unusual.
Amount of punches in incredible.
Well, you know what he has above all those other guys is perfect technique.
Mm.
You never see him drop his hands.
No.
He never does anything stupid. He never wings punches. Everything he's setting things up. If he's throwing a right hand, he's setting up a left. If he's throwing a jab, he's setting up
a hook. No wasted motion.
No wasted motion. Everything perfectly technically correct.
And he also spent a few years in the joint, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is essentially like just putting yourself into a hyperbaric chamber for like 8 years. Like you don't really age. Those guys just for some reason.
Terrible nutrition and lots of stress.
It's
I would say that you age more.
President.
I know, except for some of those guys come out of there much better shape than when they went in. I mean,
it's their cellmates that got all the stress.
I guess so, but he seemed to also have something to prove.
What the fuck was that?
It was a cell door closing.
It was Flintstones.
I'm filling in for the real guy.
Fill in for the blanks. You
know,
figure out what that sound was.
So, Joe, I always say, you know, the definition of a bad job is the repetition, and people don't understand that. They think it's about money, and it's about money, but it's mostly about repetition. When they're talking about sad jobs, they do that thing where a guy goes, he went to the same postal sorting facility outside of Tennessee for 41 years, then he retired and died, and everyone just goes, oh, a life wasted. That is sad. And what I always say about our business, the money's nice, but it's the fact that you're doing stand-up one night, you're hanging out with the Wayans brothers the next day. You're writing a book. You're working on your next special. You're doing a podcast. The fact that you get to be doing something different on almost a daily basis, much like the aforementioned do you love Thai food analogy, that's what makes it good.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also, I'm very fortunate that everything I do, I love to do.
I
don't have a single thing in my life right now that I don't love to do.
But it's not a great way to get rich.
It's a podcast thing.
No, doing a whole shitload of different things.
Well, it depends.
It's a good way to make a good living, but not get rich. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you wanted... I mean, when I used to swing a hammer, my problem was I didn't get into one trade. You know, it's like one day I'd be building a deck for someone, the next day I'd be building a fence for someone, the next day I'd be remodeling someone's bathroom. The guys who make money are the guys
in patios.
Just in patios.
And kitchen specialists.
Yeah, they just do. And we'll come in and we'll be in 3 days and we'll put a face, we'll do a facelift on your kitchen and blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, they have a fleet of vans and it's boring as shit and they're doing the same thing all day, every day, but they've sort of specialized and they've got all the tools for it and they got good at it and they figured the business out and they can estimate and so on and so forth. I mean, Joe Rogan, if you just said, I'm going to focus on Vegas, I'm going to focus on going to Vegas, playing Vegas, working an act, you know, I'll work a matinee show on a Sunday, blah, 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 you'd make more money than you made now, but you'd probably go nuts.
Maybe. I mean, for the UFC, there's no way I could do just that. Because, first of all, there's only one event every couple of weeks. You know,
right.
Sometimes there's only one a month. Sometimes there's two or three a month. But, you know, it's off. So what would I do all those other times? You know, all those other weekends? And I would go crazy. I'd go crazy out of boredom. So for the UFC, I almost have to have some sort of another job. You know, but with stand-up, you know, the beautiful thing about the UFC is it's only one night. And it's very minimal amount of, like, work that I have to do to prepare for it. Actually, none. I mean, everything I do to prepare for it, I would do already.
And
stand-up, I'm always going to do it. It's always, so to do those two together is pretty simple. And then the podcast... Well, the podcast is what I do during the afternoon with friends, and it helps the stand-up because there's new ideas that come up that eventually become bits. It helps promote the stand-up. It helps people, you know, people tune in because it's kind of interesting, and there's you get a chance to, like, be a part of some weird conversation that you don't have anybody around you that's willing to have that kind of conversation with you.
Sure.
So to me, I'm just real lucky that they all organically all go together.
How, when you said you're working on your next stand-up special.
Yeah. I'm going to shoot it in June, it looks like.
How do you prepare for that?
Well, I record all my sets. Every single set I ever do, I record. And then most of them I go back and listen to, unless I didn't do anything new in that one. I don't have to listen to it. But, you know, I listen to inflection. I listen to, well, does this bit go well there? Should I move it here? And sometimes when you're hearing things, you know, you're the observer, you can take the idea into a new direction. And then I'll write, like, what about this? What about that? And I'll write that down. And then the next time I go on stage, either I'll prepare it, I'll write something out, or when I go on stage, I'll just kind of riff it, and then I'll try to go off on that other direction. And then once I measure it, I get it down to about an hour and 20 or so minutes for a 45-minute special, because that's what it is with television commercials and everything. So an hour and 20, I like it to have an hour and 25 minutes so I can move stuff around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that way you never know, like, what you like, what you don't like.
And you go out and work that stuff in the clubs.
Yeah, and then
I smash it.
I get it so it's really tight. Like, right now, I'm in the smash it part. Mm-hmm. Like, if the special...
I feel like you spend a lot of time in the smash it.
It's part of my life.
A lot of that. Yeah.
I have instincts.
But it is funny. If you're talking to a guy's hobby is arranging flowers, he'd be like, you've got to arrange the jokes and just a beautiful bouquet. And then Joe was like, you got to take those jokes. You got to fucking ground them. Either ground them or you submit them, but you punish those jokes.
Well, when you get to the smash it stage, what I call the smash it stage, is when you're cutting out, you're making the best economy of words possible. You're chopping out unnecessary words. You're putting the punchlines closer and closer together so that the story has the intensity builds up. It's like waves, you know? And it has to just feel right to me. And it takes, like, after I do a special, this is terrifying. So, because, like, for months, I'm just scrambling to come up with new material. It's a race between the time that it films and then the time that it airs.
Right.
You know, it films, and then I've got three months, depending on when they decide to air it.
Right.
You know, and then, fuck, man, you got to have a shitload of new things because all these people are going to have seen
once that thing airs.
Yeah, you got to come out of it. And I feel like that, too. I do a weekly show at Sal's Comedy Hall on Melrose, and I do that for that very reason, just to fuck around and come up with new material because it's a really small place, and it's... You know, a fun spot, and a bunch of people come down. You know, Sarah Silverman's done it, and Doug Benson does it all the time. And we do guest sets there, and it's like it forces you to, like, write shit because I know these people are coming all the time. They're like, they've been there like 3 weeks in a row. Like, fuck, I gotta have some new material, you know? And so it puts you in a position where you sort of have to produce new stuff. And so I'm ready to let it go. It's like I've got the pigeon in my hand and I'm opening the window and I'm ready to let it go.
Tyson-esque reference.
I gotta build a new pigeon.
Do you feel like if somebody didn't give you that sort of hard date, like, hey, we're taping in June. We're going in June. That you would just almost keep this process going in perpetuity.
That would be a terrible thing because, you know, the jokes eventually. I was just having this conversation on the way over here with Brian Callen because Brian Callen just taped his Comedy Central special.
Right.
And we were talking about what it feels like to have the jokes like honed down to the point where they're like a weapon, you know. Mm-hmm. But eventually you keep using them and they dull out.
Right.
They even though they're really good and sharp, people have seen them. You've done it. You lose the connection with it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
The excitement, it's a process.
There's
you know,
a kind of a sweet spot.
Yes.
It's kind of like, I don't know, guacamole. You know, when you're mashing it, you don't want to eat it. You got get the lemon, get the cilantro, get the whatever. But if you let it sit around too long, by the end of the party, it goes to shit. Like, there's a part where you're developing the joke where it's not quite ready. And there's a part where it crests over the hill and you're kind of bored with the joke.
Yeah.
And there's that sweet little snow cap at the top, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah.
when you want to do... You're special. Here's how my process goes. I travel the country. I do about a 90-minute show, maybe about 40 minutes worth of improv. And then I say to Donnie after the show, anything funny in that show? And he goes, not really. And then I go back to the hotel and beat off and go to bed. That's my process.
That's where you really smash it.
You're doing local. When you're doing shows, are you doing podcast shows? Are you doing stand-up and podcasts? You varying it?
I'm doing stand-up when I go out to do these theaters.
Because you took a long time off. When I saw you when we did the Irvine Improv, that was the first time you had done it. You said in like, what, a decade or something?
Yeah. Well, you know what's weird? What's weird for me is I was never a stand-up per se. I was a little bit like, you know, a couple open mics. I never found my voice or my way. I didn't know what the hell to do. You know, it was a bad experience for me. So I had a... bad open mic. I was like molested by guys who ran open mics, and I never wanted to go back into that church again.
It wasn't
and,
your
it
fault.
Wasn't, but I turned on myself.
I know.
And I just said, no more of that. And so it was weird because then my whole career, people would do the whole like, they do the whole thing where they go, oh, do you do stand-up? You do stand-up, Ryan? I go, no, I don't do stand-up. They go, oh. You know, it was sort of I guess, you see, I always likened it to fighting, which is if you tell somebody I don't want to fight, they go, oh, a pussy. I get it, you're a pussy. And you go, no, I could be a badass, but maybe I don't want to fight. And they go, right, pussy.
Do you know how many times I've had that conversation?
I'm sure you've had you have it on a daily basis with probably family members before you leave the house. Every fight I've gotten into, every street fight I've ever gotten into, I've actually partially done it purposely by saying, you know what, I don't want any, and I know the second you do that, or you don't, because now you just fucking found some douchebag, and you go, you know, these are new jeans, and I don't want to mess them up, and then they go like, oh yeah, motherfucker, well you're gonna have to fucking move into a gap when I'm done with your shit, you know, and then
because you're fighting such clever people,
I know they're not really that smart. No,
he's writing words for them after the fact.
No, it's just stuff like I got stitches in my knee, and them go. And I'm going to break your other knee and like that kind of stuff. So the second you take one step backward, they always take two steps forward. It's a weird way to get someone to fight you, even if you're saying I don't want to get into a fight with you. But in the realm of the stand up is sort of like that. When you go, I don't do. Oh, okay. So you're not.
Who is these? Who are these people that are? Oh, other stand ups? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Comics? I don't mean. Oh, like in a way, you know, over the top farcical
but
way, but just
bit
a little.
Judging you.
I guess he can't handle doing. And by the way, I bought into it too. I was like, I can't get up there and stand around. I mean, even
but even I get that. It's like people see someone who they think is funny, and then they just assume you do stand up. Like that's just where their mind goes.
Right. And I would have never done it. And I would have been the first to go, that's not my thing. Like, I don't think I could work that way. And I just built an act and would just do it now.
What made you decide to pull the trigger?
What happened, like anything, is somebody said, hey, do you want to do your podcast? You want to do it live? You want to do it over at Irvine at the Improv? And I said, yeah, well, you know, why not? And the next thing you know, me and Joe Rogan are standing around on stage. And then they go, hey, you want to come back next month and do it again? And then it eventually started morphing into, well, why don't you just come out there and do it? Like, why don't you just stand, you know, bring Joe Rogan or whoever, Brian Callum or whoever out there. But you don't need the bells and whistles. Just do, and then sort of like training wheels or something. Or when Forrest Gump was running and his leg braces were popping off. At a certain point, At a certain point, it was like 4 months later, and I just found myself walking out and doing an hour and a half.
And Joe Rogan wasn't there.
And Joe Rogan wasn't there to hold my hands. He's like a
box. But you were fine.
The Wayans brothers are like a box of chocolates.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Tune in right now. You have no idea what the fuck he's talking about. <that's> You just caught this halfway in.
I have a question for actually for both of you, but more for you, Joe. How much do you feel like you're performing when you're doing your podcast?
Not at all. I just feel like a conversation. Mm-hmm. I've only done one live one of our own. We did Jimmy Norton. We did it at the Smod Castle at Kevin Smith's joint. Mm-hmm. And it was really intimate. It's only like 50 people. So it felt more like a conversation rather than the improv, which was like 300.
Right.
That felt a little more pressure. The 50 people didn't really feel like that much pressure. But you could feel it a little bit.
Right.
But I don't feel like in a regular – I don't feel like we're performing at all. I feel like it's just a conversation.
Mm. Well, that – that's the good part, because when you do the metronome thing, like when you get going with the metronome, when you essentially go, okay, we're now going to speed this up because you're performing now, then all of a sudden the conversation changes. You can never go as long form. You can never get to those places or those truths or whatever they are that you just couldn't you become closer to a late night talk show host and less of this. I'm not making a value judgment. I'm just saying I think people like this format because it's an alternative to the format that's on TV and on AM and FM radio right now.
Yeah, and you get conversations that outside of satellite radio you would never get into. And even in satellite radio, there's people that aren't having these kind of conversations. It's more pop culture and politics and, you know, just really more traditionally acceptable BS.
Yeah, it's not. You know? I'll tell you, the best compliment I'd say is people coming up and they go, "Hey, man, that conversation with Sammy Hagar was awesome. I didn't even like that guy. Like, I didn't even know who that guy was."
Did you have one with him?
I have
to listen to that.
And everyone's like, "I really like him now." And it's like, because you got to know who Sammy Hagar was, where you were just seeing the red rocker and the guy jumping out there and the Hawaiian shirt and all that.
Well, that's
before.
A really good point about podcasts too, is that there's never been a format where I felt like I was able to express myself, like besides doing podcasts, because I go on a talk show and I feel like, man, after, you know, you're sitting there for 5 minutes and you're talking to Jay and just trying to say as much funny shit as possible, and then before you know it, you're back in your dressing room going, it didn't go the way I wanted it to go, and then people can tune into it and get whatever weird impression they get off you from 5 minutes. But when they listen to you talk for two hours, they know who you are, you know.
Sure, and even if it did go exceedingly well, it's you still didn't get the point. Any real points across?
Yeah,
like
it was
just jokes, and it was just, again, back to these sort of empty calories. Speaking of empty calories, Allison, how are you feeling about the news, baby girl?
What happened?
Great.
I just gave her a little backhand.
Center next to Donnie's mini bikes.
We'll do the news.
Is the news?
He called me empty calories. Before a real news story, I want to tell you guys that last night I saw something I've never seen before. So my mom ordered Chinese food, and there was a duck head in it.
Really?
Yes. On purpose. It was upsetting, and yet.
Oh,
then,
not on purpose.
No. Oh no, hell no. She's not a monster. She would just eat the other part of the duck.
No, I know, but they might put the duck head in there.
Yeah, no. I think it was a mistake.
Okay.
I mean, I think maybe.
First off, I freaked out because I saw your parents last night at the aforementioned Irvine Improv, and
yes.
I thought they ate there. So they got some hardcore Chinese food going on.
So the Chinese people made a mistake?
Yes. Yes.
We're assuming the Chinese.
Are you sure? Because sometimes if you go to a really nice, like, fish restaurant, they'll leave the fish head on. It's a weird rich man, poor man thing where it's like sometimes the better the restaurant, the more parts of the actual beast are attached to it when you receive it.
It was a pretty authentic Chinese restaurant that they pick stuff up from.
You go to New York, they got stuff hanging in the window.
Yeah. So I feel like maybe if they were Asian, maybe they give them the duck head, but they're like a couple round eyes.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh.
Duck heads. I mean, obviously.
Ick.
Uh-huh. That looks like
duck
hair.
So there was a duck head in there.
Mm-hmm. But it was missing the beak. I think it was a mistake.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, we all had that moment of realizing how hypocritical we all are, because, you know, what's why is this part of the animal really that different than eating the other parts of the animal?
Right. And by the way,
and I don't know, but it was, I'm sort of haunted by it.
The duck head's in some incinerator somewhere, and you're much better just because you're eating the duck breast.
I don't even eat duck. because it's too cute.
That's mm-hmm. clearly that's, a chick yeah. thing. The whole thing you're saying about being haunted by the duck thing. I don't know any guys that would be like that.
No. Really?
It'd be like, take that duck head out, and does it taste good? No.
Yeah.
No, you can't eat it. All right, put it aside.
It had right. an eye.
It had an eye.
So yeah, fish. There was a... You ever got a live fish?
I would never eat a fish with a head.
Really?
I'm you a would? Chick. No. No. I can't handle the faces. But now, I can't even eat crawfish.
What about lobster? Can you eat lobster?
I would prefer that it's out of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
How about Shetland pony? Head that, on or
I
head
like
on?
The snout.
Okay. You like the snout.
Yeah. They're
okay.
so good. Dipped right. in mustard.
All right.
Okay. So, Michael.
Reality of food.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer to live in the illusion of it just magically got on my plate.
I'm illusion of restaurants.
I'm halfway with you on that one. I don't want to know what's going on. I don't want to know who's preparing it.
My latest mindset is that I want to start hunting. I want to kill my own food.
I like that.
I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Yeah. I lived in Colorado for a while. I don't mm-hmm. know if we talked to you. One of the reasons why I moved there, I moved to the woods. I was living on the top of a mountain, 3,000 feet above Boulder. Then my dog got eaten by a mountain lion, and my wife got pregnant, and we had to get out of there because the oxygen is really low because the air is really high. But my ultimate goal
with
was
her pregnancy.
Yeah, it's dangerous. You can't be pregnant up there. Even if you're acclimated to it, it takes like 3 years to get acclimated.
I can see Joe. No, I'm only laughing because I can see Joe. I know this story, and I can see Joe doing some morning radio, as you have to do when you do stand-up, and there's that thing where you're calling the East Coast, and you're 3 hours early, and the guy tells you got to call in at 5:45 in the morning, and I can see him, Joe going, talking to ass crack and back sack in the morning, and Joe's like, yeah, I'm 3 miles above Boulder. Anyway, my dog got pregnant. My wife got eaten by mountain lion. So anyway, what with the pregnancy, it was time. It was time, you know, she couldn't. Because of the altitude, we needed to move back down. And I'm sure you could, like, when you're tired, you can just skip over stuff or flip-flop. You could go on for another 10 minutes still talking, telling jokes.
I flip-flop things all the time and don't realize
it.
And then someone has to tell me, do you know what you just said?
You just said, right.
Oh, sorry.
I could have said that to you right now and just fucked with you, right?
Easily, yeah.
All right, but that would have been cruel. All right. And by the way, you said fuckhead instead of duckhead, by the way, but keep going. So it didn't make any sense at all.
I don't eat fucks.
But yeah, you wanted to hunt fucklings.
I think it's a good way to live.
You know, I
do
too.
Completely connected to what you're doing. I've watched many of those PETA documentaries. They're very, very disturbing. So I try to eat organic food. I try to eat, you know.
Sure.
You know.
But I don't understand the people. Like, my whole thing with the hunting is, if you're going to eat whatever you shoot or pull out of a river or, you know, shoot with a crossbow if you're Ted Nugent, then I'm cool with you. If you're going to shoot it and put it up in your den, then that ain't cool.
I don't get that
So
either, yeah.
My whole thing is shoot away. I don't have a judgment on hunters. I have judgment on hunters that just shoot stuff and leave it out there. Whatever.
There are certain animals, though, that you have to shoot just to keep populations down. You know, they're having to do that in Africa
like
now.
Showgirls.
Whoa.
Yeah.
The most dangerous game.
That's right. What are they doing in Africa?
Elephants.
Oh, really?
Issue with elephants, yeah.
That's sort of controversial, though, as to whether there truly are problem elephants. Because that's like the goat. We talked about that on this show. The GoDaddy guy who shot the elephant buck that may have been a young female elephant.
Whoa.
And
that,
they claimed
is that the
it
GoDaddy
was.
Guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Claimed it was problem
he's
elephants.
From Chicago.
And then there are people there. People. In
well,
Zimbabwe,
not even saying,
saying
problem that they have to keep the population down, and also
but,
hunting.
But I think
when
that
you,
there's a question about whether that's actually.
I'll do my impersonation of the guy, Joey. Joey, can I call you Joey?
Sure.
Joey Rogan, everybody. Hey, love that Beer Factor show you did. That was some good shit right there. I'll tell you that right now. Best show of the man season. The man show, he asked me, season 5 with Joey Rogan, everybody. Anyway, I got to shoot an elephant every once in a while because I got to thin the herd. You don't understand. Mother Nature, man, she'll come down on you like a goddamn lightning bolt. Speaking of lightning bolt, that is Mother. You know, who the hell created that one? You think that's God farting? So I'm out there with my elephant gun taking down a couple pack of derms, you know? And I'm getting all kinds of shit for it. I can't run a stock car team anymore because I take down a couple of pachyderms, you know, who are, they're stomping on people's crops. They're eating all the indigenous things over there. You know, and plus, you seen any of those Africans? Those guys go about $125. You think they're going to pull down an elephant? No, it's a husky white guy with 30-06 going to take out one of those babies. Right, Joey?
Yes, I agree with you.
But we got to eat the elephant, you know?
You should serve it to the tribal people.
They got
they
elephant,
will eat it.
Yeah, elephant burgers. You got elephant kebab. You can put the head on the plate and freak out Allison's mom.
I don't know whether you're right.
Plate.
I don't know whether you're right or not about whether they're lying about the... You know,
I am.
Whether you're right,
I just feel it in my bones. I don't really.
Well, you know, I have seen some elephant stomps the shit out of some people, and I am on team people.
Yeah,
you know, and if people are encroaching in their area, I tend to say tough shit to the elephants.
Wait,
hold on, let me say it. Tough shit, the elephant.
Tough shit,
Joey Rogan says that, and if you don't like it, he'll get you in a figure four.
Here's the deal: you ain't got thumbs.
That's
so you
right.
Ain't got guns.
Yeah.
So we win, stupid.
That's right.
Where did you see elephants stomping people?
Lots of videos online. Come on.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
silly.
You got to beat
don't
off
even
to
say that,
don't you?
If you don't see elephants stomping people, you're not looking.
Yeah. You ain't on the World Wide Web if you don't see elephants stomping something.
You know, in Texas, they recently passed legislation allowing hunters to shoot pigs from helicopters.
Mm.
They have such a problem with wild feral pigs that they're wild feral. That's like jumbo big shrimp.
Yeah.
But they're shooting them from fucking
married.
Helicopters.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, they're dangerous because they got what you call the tusk there. They put one of those right in your keister. Oh, believe me, you'll wish they'd shot them from a helicopter.
Pigs are some of the weirdest. Pigs are some of the weirdest animals because when they're wild for just 3 weeks, in 3 weeks' time, their bodies start to morph. And they change, physically change. Their tusks grow longer. Their snouts grow longer. Their hair gets dark and thick.
They develop a taste for human
blood. They literally change. Well, they eat people like crazy. Look, if you fall into that's that whole, the movie Snatch. The pigs will eat fucking anything. If you fall into a pig pen, they'll fucking eat you. I mean, it's the number one animal that kills people on farms.
Really?
Pigs, yeah.
I mean, really? I should shoot those pigs. You know what? When
people
I'm done
die
with
the
elephants, I'm going to shoot a
it's
pig.
It's a common farmer thing. They fuck up. They fall into a pigsty when the pigs are getting fed, and there's a bunch of them, and the guy gets hurt, and they get stomped, and next thing you know, boom, that's a wrap.
That's
the
how my dad and grandpa went.
And you don't think they're just angry because of bacon? Because that's the elephant argument. That's the argument against shooting
elephants.
They're
angry because of bacon.
I'm just kidding.
Because they go to IHOP and they order bacon, and they're like, what the fuck? That's
Rudy
my mom.
A Rudy fresh and fruity, if you please.
They say elephants... And I sound like I'm coming off like a huge PETA person, and I'm really not. But the argument against shooting what they're calling problem elephants is that elephants remember forever, elephant memory, and they remember if you shoot them, remember
they
their family,
grieve.
And
then
they
you're
get
shooting
angry,
them
and then they turn anti.
You're supposed to kill them when you shoot them.
They get more violent towards humans.
We ain't molesting them, sweetie. We're shooting them. That's a difference. Put one right in their brain.
Turning them into terrorists.
Are they going to remember the bullet in their brain?
Yeah.
Use your brain, sweetie.
I don't think the argument is problem elephants
what?
As much as
you think you have to isolate them before you shoot them? No, they know. They know if you shoot one of their
family members. I'm getting a helicopter and I'm shooting some pigs in Texas. I like
safer
that.
For people.
Go,
by
Daddy.
The way, PETA people, I'm not on the argument of go shoot an elephant. I'm just throwing it out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Look,
really...
my feeling is they eat whatever. As long as you eat whatever it is you shoot, I'm cool with that. Because anyone who shops it, even if you're getting organic or whatever, chicken or whatever beef, whatever it is, then you're a hypocrite.
And that was Joe Rogan back in 2011. Joe loves his hobbies. We all know how the hunting thing turned out for him. I remember one time he came in. It might have been this time, or maybe a year later. And he came in with a pool cue in its case, just like straddled over his shoulder, walking around with that. We don't even have a pool table here. He had one at his place, and I think he was going there right after. But he was, he likes his hobbies.
What kind of podcast studio is this? You don't have a pool table?
I know.
He may have also been coming from somewhere with a table. But yeah, he's very adamant about his custom-made cue, which I believe is thousands of dollars.
It looked expensive. And he looked
very,
it looked
very
like
much.
He was really
good. Him and Greg actually would always play, Greg Fitzsimmons, before podcasts. And the only thing he's ever said negative about Adam is that they haven't played pool together. Like, that's his one dream was that Adam would hang out and play pool at his studio, and Adam didn't know that he was supposed to do that.
It's Joe's studio is also kind of like a man cave, or at least the one
it still
that
exists. He's moved to Texas, but he's keeping the Los Angeles studio for the time being.
Oh, there you go. Well, it's very fun to be over there. I've been over there myself. All right. Before we get going with the next clip, I want to tell everybody about Madison Reed Mister. If you're working from home, you're looking at that screen, checking out your hair. Your hair and your beard might be a little too gray for your liking. Let me help you out. Check out Madison Reed Mister. It's a gray blending, natural-looking color for your hair and your beard. Check out the before and after shots on their site. It looks great. It's not that shoe polishy look. Lynette Carolla loves this stuff, too. They have a lot of products for women at Madison Reed. They're very well-known for women as well. And it's quick and easy to use. Just apply the color gel to your hair, then add the activator. Wait 10 minutes. You rinse, shampoo, and you're there. You're looking good. Plus, they deliver right to your door. That's Madison Reed Mister. All you got to do is go to MadisonReedMister.com. That's MadisonReedMister.com. Use the code Adam10 for 10% off plus free shipping on your first box. Again, that's code Adam10. All right, we heard some Greg. We heard some Joe. But let's go back to Greg again, because these guys are killers on stage. We got Adam, Greg Fitzsimmons, Allison Rosen, and Brian Bishop live on stage in 2011.
This is Adam Carolla Show 543. It's the previous episode of the one we just heard, except it's a live episode, and there's not really any continuity that we're messing up by airing out of sequence. And this one, it's Adam, Greg, Allison, Brian live on stage. Adam had to race to this venue, and turns out that Lynette moved his keys, and they got to do a bit of an argument beforehand. And this is like a one-time-only story that you probably haven't heard since. And he's going to Greg to like be a marriage counselor of sorts to weigh in on what happened. It's one of the greatest all-time stories. It's hilarious. And check it out.
They should bring out Fitzsimmons for this. I feel like he's going to help me out on this. Ladies and gentlemen, comedian extraordinaire, Greg Fitzsimmons. Greg, are you out there? Or is he in there eating his burger and watching golf? Greg, please help me settle this argument. I got the last words I had with my wife today was that I was an asshole, and that I scared
who
the
said
kids.
It? You or her?
She said I was an asshole and that I scared the kids.
Yeah.
As well. All right. So here's my thing. I have a somewhat complicated life, and that's my fault.
Yes.
I got too much shit, too many projects, too many cars, too much. Just too much junk. House is too big. Too much shit in the house.
Too many sombreros, apparently.
Right. It's one of these things where I've done it to myself. I've been bitten by my own snake. My house is too large. There's too many places to hide shit. There's too many cars. There's too much shit. It's one of those cry me a river, white rich guy things, but I fucked myself. And then I've surrounded myself with people that are somewhere between apathetic and incompetent in terms of like what I do, and who, by the way, resent me for making money.
Do you ever see on late night TV when there's like an African kid and he's sitting on just a bowl of dust playing with a tin can and a stick and get mm-hmm. jealous for a second?
Yeah, like I think it's so simple.
So simple.
When's his alarm going off tomorrow? Noon? Or does he even have an alarm?
He has
That's
no alarm.
My mind. Can't afford an alarm.
And he doesn't lose that can. It's the only fucking thing he has.
Right. No, I know, that's all, and I could make his day with one packet of Top Ramen. He would never stop celebrating.
You could bag a bowl of toilet water, ship it to him, and make his fucking month.
Done and done. Although I'm going to write tap water on the bag.
Write tap water, and look,
I'm going to write spring water. I'm going to take it to the next level.
And make it a clean bowl.
Right. So, I got you.
He's got a fucking tin can.
That's all he has. All right, so here's why my wife explained to me that I was an asshole. Again, the house is too big. There's too much shit in it. And I just go, look, let's start getting organized. Just start putting shit in the same place. We'll never have to think. We won't burn calories thinking about where the cell phone are, where the keys are, where everything is. So, I borrow my wife's car. Yeah, which is, by the way, they never factor in the part where I am leasing her a very expensive
Jag. Volvo.
The Jag you drove in.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm borrowing her car. I borrow it yesterday. I come home with the kids at 4 in the afternoon. She then comes home at 4:30 in the afternoon, and we proceed to hang out in the house the entire night, last night. Smash cut to this afternoon. I'm going out getting my hair cut. I'm taking her car because I'm going to pick you up in her car because it's better than my car, and I'm going to drive it out here. I go to where the keys are, and there's my car keys, but her car keys are nowhere to be found.
No.
And I say, where are your car keys? And she says, well, you were the last person to drive the car, Wiseacre. And I said... She didn't say Wiseacre. I think she said douchebag or something. But she said...
I didn't know if it was the 1930s in the scene.
Grandpa Walton had just come in and thrown his hat on the ground and yelled, concern. She got up a raccoon coat and pulled up in her Stutz Bearcat. So she said she started to mock me. Premature mocking.
Yeah.
She's at pre-mockage. She suffers from premature immoculation. She said, well, you are the one who drove the car yesterday, so where'd you put the keys? And I was like, well, I probably would have put them right here on the entry table where I would normally. But she said, well, obviously you put them somewhere and it ain't here. And I said, well, and then I start turning into a chick. I said, I had the kids and the kids' shoes were filled with sand from the park. So I had to kick everyone's shoes off and maybe I got distracted when I was taking them. She said, oh, see, how's it feel now? I told you, taking care of the kids. That's a calorie burner, right? So you were kicking their shoes off in the front, trying to get the sand out or whatever. You probably set the keys down somewhere. And I was like, okay, all right, you're right. All right, let me go look. And then I go upstairs and I do that thing where I check the sweatpants and I check and I can't find, and then I check the hoodie thing with the pockets, and then I do that thing, even though there's, you do that move where there's two pockets in your sweat jacket. There's left and right pocket.
It's a zip up.
Yeah, you check both of them. There's nothing there, but still before you put it down, you shake it once, like somebody sewed the keys into the back of the...
Could be in the hood.
So I do a shake. And then I put it down, then the sweatpants, then I did the thing. Then I say to my wife, I don't know where they are. And she's like, well, see, before you start pointing your finger and wagging your finger to everyone, next time you should read. The kids are distracting, blah, blah, blah. And I said, so you didn't go anywhere after I got home. You came home after me, right? She's like, yeah. And I'm like, you didn't head out last night or anything, did you? Like, she's like, no, I didn't go near the car after that. And I'm like, God damn. And so I'm starting to question myself, and she goes, well, why don't you go check the car? And I said, they're not in the car. I couldn't get in the house if I didn't have the keys. I got the key on there, so the house key's on there. So I'm upstairs. I'm patting my, keep doing that thing where
you
I'm
keep
patting
doing
myself
it.
Down.
Yeah.
And I'm go. You go, at some point, you'll double back and go back to the same sweat jacket, even though you fucking, there's two pockets, and give it the shake one more time. Maybe some elf put the keys back in or something. Shaking around back to sweat. Then you start getting a little desperate. Maybe they fell behind the hamper when I threw the, you know, you're crawling around looking through the drawers and all that kind of stuff.
Did you go out to the car and check the car?
No need to go check the car because impossible to open the front door without the keys. And I didn't walk them back into the car. I couldn't.
Got
it's impossible.
It. Got it.
So my wife is now mocking me, giving
pre-mocking
me the premature mockery, and she's doing the, yeah, see, not so easy. See, I told her, blah, 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 blah. And she's starting to mock, and I'm saying to her, be careful, because it still is, it may not, this still could come around to you.
Yeah,
and some, I could hit a fucking half quarter at the buzzer and bank it in and still win this game.
Absolutely.
Because I'm, do not, you never.
Don't uncork the champagne.
Oh, always, yeah. Don't even start chilling, because I always have a puncher's chance, because I'm
Absolutely.
Fucking meticulous with my shit. I put my shit down. Always a puncher's chance. I know it doesn't sound great in a relationship. I would always work the body, though. I would never go the head.
Yeah, so you're not an animal.
I don't need any trouble from the cops. The point is this. I'm fucking tearing the house apart. Like I said, questioning myself. And I'm thinking, you know, it was so pious about it. Your shit and how good, and now you fucked up and you can't even find, it's a big clump of keys. Can't even find, I'm looking in the office, I'm running around all over the house. And at some point, she comes out. And she's got the keys. And I said, where did you find them? And by the way, this is where you bitches need to learn to lie.
Oh, you.
Because you could have just said, on your side of the bed, underneath the whatever.
That's
and
the
I
move.
Would have never said a fucking word. But my wife cannot lie.
So she says,
they're in the car. And I said, yeah, slow motion. Slow motion. I said, in the car. How are they in the car? And she said, I went out there last night to look for something and just left him in the car. And I was like, God damn it. And she was like, sorry. And I was like, well, fucking A. I mean, Jesus Christ, you're fucking with me at this point, right? Like, you went out last night with the keys and just left them in the car overnight and then snuck back into the, like, did you climb in through a window? How'd you get back in the house? And she's like, why are you being a dick? And I just want to say something. Women, you have no idea how much we hold back in front of you. If this was a dude, fucking punchers would be being thrown. Like, are you kidding me? This is not one-tenth of the dickosity that I could be at right now. You, by, after this exchange where I'm being gaslit for a half hour running around my house and thinking I'm insane, you think, oh, apology accepted. I'm going to go get my haircut. Thank you very much for being so...
Yeah.
No. This is nothing.
Is your anger tempered at all by the fact that she told you the truth? Something that you admitted you wouldn't do yourself. I know for a fact. If I found the keys and it was flipped, fucking keys go in her purse.
Oh,
I'll go
purse.
Find a purse.
I'm going to chuck them into the ivy.
Yeah.
Forget it. No one's driving the car.
Yeah.
It'll never be found.
Fuck it.
Wipe them down into the ivy.
That's a good person. She's a good human being that she did that. And she can't do a bad thing.
No,
that must have made you less angry.
No. You know what I think it is? I would like the dignity of her lying to me. She won't even show me that dignity.
You deserve better.
I think I do deserve. I deserve a lie. I've earned it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't give a shit. They're in the car. So what?
It's too much drama. If you're going one emotion, let you fucking follow that emotion and stay on it. You don't need a hard turn to anger and self-righteousness.
Right. So I said, at that point, I was like, oh, god damn. I mean, shit. I've circumnavigated the house 28 times. I've searched the same fucking sweatpants nine. And she was like, then she did that thing that all chicks do, which is, oh, you know what? Then fuck you. Then fuck you. It's like a second ago, you were ruining my life.
Yeah,
now,
yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck you. Get the, okay. Oh, that's how you're going to be?
Yeah,
by the way, what do you mean that's how I'm going to be? Of course that's how I'm going to be. I've been looking for the fucking keys for a half hour. How else would you like me to be? There is no other way of being in this situation.
It's not how are you going to be. It's how is one be.
Right.
How would one be?
Right.
This is how one would be.
Right. And then she gave me the, okay, oh, I get it. Okay, so you're going to be an asshole. And it's like, can I at least have 20 seconds of being an asshole after this ordeal? And again, if this was guy-on-guy crime, this would never... we'd still be in the entry hall arguing over this shit.
Well, it's kind of like what we were talking about on the way down here in terms of black people and gay people. And if you have a black gay person, you cannot win. And I think a wife falls into the category of... Look, what
hey,
I'm talking
hold on.
About
it's
is...
It's a 50-minute ride. It's not like we didn't talk about Jews. I mean... Weather. Golf.
They run the banks.
Yeah, yeah.
A gay black guy, you can't win because you... The more somebody is oppressed, the less the white guy is allowed to have any problem with that person. So we talked specifically of the gay... Holy fuck, they're here.
We got a gay Jew coming in on a zip line to take your ass out.
And you know he's in costume on the zip line.
The brown and pink hornet strikes again.
I'm going to be trapped, motherfucker! So your wife, as an oppressed woman with kids, you saw what fucking artillery was aimed at you when you had lost the keys. And then in the exact same scenario that she did, the actual tolerance for a fucking, just a fucking 22 count, nothing. You're not allowed that.
Right.
You need to be perfect and work all the time.
Yes.
Because you're the man. You're the bad guy.
Yes. And then...
How many gay black guys are here?
We don't have enough time for everyone to raise their hands. Let's just do applause. Let's do applause because the hands take
They're
way too
the
long.
They're on the down low. They'll never tell you.
I then came back with the fucking double burn, which pissed her off even more, which is when I took her car to go get my haircut. I knew I'd be coming back in 45 minutes, except for the fucking jarhead Mexican guy who was getting his hair cut before me. Unclear. I don't know his ethnicity, but it wasn't one of us. Let's put it that way around the corner. Because I'm awake, I took the car seats out of her car and placed them into my car, knowing she would take my car with the kids and might leave before I return.
Why take her car?
I took her car... Because she was going to split for the day, and she was just going down the street, and I was driving to Irvine, and I needed the long-range mobile. That's why I took her car. She gave a preemptive strike, which is she called me from inside the house on the cell phone and said, hey, wise ass, you just took off in my car, and I bet you took the kids' seats with you, didn't you? And I said, no, I did not, because I have a brain, and I use it. I took them out of the car so that you may use them on your thing. And then she did that another chick bullshit thing. She was like, oh, yeah, well, fuck you, and hung up. Like, what?
Now, let's go to the chart on this. So, first of all, she hits you with a pre-mock. And then you hit her on a double burn for her preemptive call.
Right.
Unbelievable.
She did the, I said I was sorry, you know, under her breath as she was walking up the stairs, but I had a fucking gunny sack filled of putrid vitriol for whatever happened to these keys, and that one little sorry was not going to empty that.
No.
I needed a fucking, I needed Grand Canyon to dump that shit into, and I'm just saying, ladies, you can't fuck up like that and expect a sorry and then walk up the stairs. You have to sit and sort of take your lumps for a couple minutes.
Absorb some of the vitriol.
Yeah, anyway, then she pulled the your dick thing, and then she pulled the real move, which is my son was scared. That's just cheap. That's dirty pool there.
That's like the, they're like the Nazis. You don't go there.
Sonny wanted to know why you grabbed the keys from me in such a hurry. And it's like, tell him the truth, baby. Go ahead.
Which would be your father's an asshole.
Oh, now you know.
I didn't know, I'm just saying.
Yeah, oh, well, that's the version that would come out. So all I'm saying is I'm now going to return to a house. You know what I mean? I don't know if Cato's hiding in the... in the entry hall for me, you know what I mean? Like, last we left it was, fuck you. And by the way, I'm not budging on this one. You fucking take the keys, go throw them in the car, and then sneak back into the house, and then have me look around for a half hour for the keys, and then go, I'm an asshole. I'm not backing down on this one.
Now, talk to me about your alcohol intake this evening as a,
okay,
as a result of this, and also how much we're going to linger versus rush back to Los Angeles after the show.
We are hitting a batting cage.
Okay. Go-kart world?
If they have a go-kart there, if they have got karting there, we'll be doing a couple of hot laps.
Yeah.
Too. Yeah. Because now I have to return to the, is she still pissed off? Am I still pissed off? How do I play it? Do we say nothing? Do I go right to the den? Do I keep the I'm still pissed off thing? Does she do? And by the way, the thing that the women always have over us is, I will immediately try to stick on the topic, which is, you took the keys, went and threw them in your car, and then came back in the house, and then when I said to you, where's the keys? You went, I don't know. Well, see, you're not so perfect. And I will try to stick to that topic because that's a case I can win.
Of course.
She will trot out a whole bunch of other shit about me not paying attention and being emotionally closed off and stuff I can't argue about because that's my soul. That's who I am. You know what I mean? Like,
and you need a judge that will say that evidence is not admissible in this trial.
That's what I need. That's exactly, I need you to come home with me.
I'm not
going to
do
tonight.
That, but a judge.
I need someone to go, that is a separate, you know, that's something that involves attorneys and therapists and professionals. That's a totally, we're arguing over this point.
Yeah. We'd have to bring in your father, your kindergarten teacher, to deal with the issue that's
underneath
this shit.
Anyone who molested me should come. I mean, all the folks. No, never molested. And again, as I know, I feel like what? I'm chopped liver over here? I looked as good as any other 9-year-old.
Hell yeah.
Couldn't drop a digit on the young age man.
Chicken liver never gets molested?
I don't. I mean, maybe Portnoy's complaint or something like that.
Yeah, Portnoy's complaint, I think, one finger. And it was an accident. It was an hors d'oeuvre.
Right, right. All right, so...
glad I fucking stopped down that little run.
All right, so I don't know what... I am going to enter the house with a shoulder roll.
Yeah.
There's going to be that move where I come in... She'll be in the kids' room. I'll be in the kids' room. The kids will be there. There'll be that buffer. So there won't be anything exchanged at that point. There'll be some weird move to see. There'll be a little body language.
Yeah.
I sit on the edge of the bed. She'll get up and walk to the other bed.
Hostile, but no eye contact.
Message sent. Yeah. Don't know. Should I back off?
Well,
should I do?
As someone with fallopian tubes, I feel obligated to bring up this point. I don't even know if I agree with it or not.
Thank you.
You're an asshole.
What about just going in the house and just saying, you know what, honey, I'm sorry. Even, I know, it goes against...
For her hiding the keys! She hid the keys! But she hid the keys! Let me, again...
I said, I just feel obligated to
say it. I don't want to put too fine a point on this, but I said... Where are the keys? And she said, I don't know. You were the last person to drive the car, so you should figure out where you put the keys. Doesn't feel too good, does it? Somewhere between...
Do you want the fight to be over, though? Not really.
But here's
he's got a gunny sack full of vitriol because she fucking She pre-mocked him.
It's not a gun.
And then ruined the double burn with the preemptive call.
Here's what I want
to
say.
She's going to do? She's going to try to fucking text you between now and when you get home because she knows she's wrong. She's going to soften it.
No, here's... No, she'll play to the bigger picture of me being an asswipe. Now, here's the thing. Fellas, please back me up on this shit. Not everything is about what's going on emotionally and everything else. Sometimes the keys are just about the keys. I'm not picking on you. This old chick. Chicks take everything. It's like, this has nothing to do with keys. This is just a personal attack. This is just one. No, it's not. I want my keys. Yeah. That's all. I don't give a fuck who. I don't care if a fucking parrot drops them off here. And that's the whole thing. And all I want is to go, look. Instead of calling me an asshole, and instead of walking away saying, now the kids are scared, and you're a dick, and see how you are, just take a moment, find a mirror, and go, maybe I should just put the keys in the entry hall table each time I come in. This would be over with.
Yeah. Yes? Yeah, because there's an overall strategy by females, and she would break the code. She would be fucked if she did that.
Just learn this one. You know what? I'll learn from this experience and put the keys. Yeah, you would shun her at the next estrogen bath.
But we went to New York this summer, and we were staying at my mother-in-law's apartment on the Upper West Side. Two bedrooms. We have two kids, and her mother's in the next room. So me and my wife got into a fight, but we didn't get into the fight. We had the
quiet fight.
It started off with a real conflict that would have been yelling, screaming, crying, forgiving, makeup sex—the full cycle.
Right.
But because we had no room. It gestated for days, and we kept not, like you said, not looking at each other, moving to the other side of the bed, sure. You know, maybe helping each other, but never directly being part of the team, raising the kids. But and then one day we just woke up and we're like, "So what do you want to do today?" It was gone.
Right.
It was like a stillborn fight.
Just flush it down the toilet. Didn't even name it.
Didn't have to cry. There was no crying.
Yeah, it was like that song "Brick."
I got pictures of it.
Okay.
It's like that song, right. Brick. What the fuck is that?
That song, Ben Folds, about like giving an abortion or something. I don't know. That's what he told me.
I think an abortion and stillborn are very different things, Adam.
Really?
Abortion.
Are they dramatically different to the fetus? Like, if you're a fetus, like, hey, man. Woo! Those stillborns are making fun of those aborted fetuses.
Yeah.
Hey, greenhorn!
The stillborns are like, he looks pretty still also.
Yeah.
Not very active, that abortion.
Right, yeah. At least my parents wanted me. You got adopted by ShopVac.
Oh, yeah. Is there a place...
Oh, that's horrible.
Is there a place where
I'm
going to
hug this shit out of my kids.
It's like they do Yo Mama jokes. There should be an MTV show where stillborns and aborted fetuses just fucking get in each other's faces.
Yeah. I've got to tell you this.
Stillborn jam.
Yeah. This motherfucking zygote. Yeah, that'd be awesome. We get Mariah Carey's husband to host it. He'd have his hat on sideways.
Yeah. Yo Mama was so young, she couldn't even have a fucking baby yet.
Yeah. I'd like to choke you out with 50 feet of fallopian tubing, dude. Wow.
Yo, right. What's up, Wade? What's up, bro?
All right. That was cathartic. I thank you for hanging with that. I'm still going to have to do the shoulder roll when I enter the house tonight.
And that was Greg Fitzsimmons playing Marriage Counselor live on stage in 2011.
Adam Carolla Show 543, April 2011.
There you go. Yes, I mean, Adam and Lynette have shared their differences over keys. It's been a long-standing thing.
This one's particularly funny just because the circumstances of Lynette leaving them in a car the night before because she was looking for something and then leaving them there.
Yeah.
And then her getting upset at Adam for being upset. That was the funniest part. And I think Greg really keyed in on that.
I think so, too. All right, before we get out of here, we want to end this show on a high note by playing some Rotten Tomatoes game. This is the 71st installment back in 2016.
Adam Carolla Show 1770, Glenn Washington, not in this portion. And no, it's not that episode. It's the first Glenn Washington visit. Matt Atchley, Gina Grant, Brian Bishop, March 2016, 71st installment of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Check it out.
Ready to play?
I'm ready to play.
All right, excited. Gonna watch San Andreas with my boy.
Have you seen it?
Oh yeah,
oh, yeah. Watched that again last night. Yeah, you boss.
It's always good.
Wow,
it's always
that,
good.
I think we watched that twice in London last night.
No, we did. Yes, we did. Can't go wrong with some San Andreas. All right, what do we got?
So with London Has Fallen hitting theaters this weekend, the sequel to Olympus Has Fallen, we're going with action movie sequels.
Isn't it funny how some movies get sequels?
Yeah, it is funny. it's
odd.
Yeah, that one made money. Enough money that they did a sequel.
I guess.
Well, they came out with two Take Over the White House movies in 2 months. Mm-hmm. It's sort of like the volcano thing, where
right.
it's like no movies and then two back-to-back.
Right.
I'm down with all that stuff. Anyway.
All right. First up, 1985 film that finds Sylvester Stallone coming back to the role that made him a super tough guy in the movies. He's this time off to finally win the Vietnam War. The movie is Rambo First Blood Part 2.
Mm. And this is where it turned into a cartoon. The first one was just a good old blood and guts action movie with some heart in it, and cat and mouse, and up in the hills, and the captain coming back,
yep.
and the drifter coming through town,
hiding in trees.
Yeah, Brian Dennehy being the perfect sheriff. He was born with a badge.
That's right. Solid movie.
Then it turned into a cartoon.
But he deserves a career achievement Oscar.
Mm-hmm. Critics had to be a little disappointed in this one, and now they were ready for it. It has the word part two on it. It was kind of insane.
85.
I am going to say, I'm going to find something to write on here.
I wonder what the cult following is on this, just because of the camp factor.
It's probably strong, but I don't think the critics love it. I say the critics gave it a 46.
This could be the game right here. I said 60.
Whoa, I went 43.
Rambo First Blood Part 2 is rotten at 28%.
That hurts.
Mm.
Got an 18-point lead on me.
Mm-hmm.
Good start.
All right, next up, 1989 film, sequel to a classic buddy cop picture, brings back Mel Gibson and Danny Glover as Riggs and Murtaugh, this time taking on South African diplomats who are actually drug dealers. The movie is Lethal Weapon 2.
Oh, these are all sequels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Action movie sequels.
Community.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just been revoked.
That poster's awesome.
Yeah, it's this weird thing. I always call it the Johnny Quest villain syndrome, which is like there was a time when we could just give a guy a German accent. We knew, we knew we're fighting. Now we just give the guy the Middle Eastern accent. We had a little weird zone in there, like Johnny Quest, like 1968. Like everyone was sort of Vietnamese, but a little bit Chinese and a little bit Korean. But we were kind of a mixture, but we find out who we're mad at and we kind of work them in. We had a little South African thing. I think it was a little apartheid thing going on. Over there,
they were a good villain.
There was a movement.
Good stand-in villain.
They're good. By the way, what you want in your villains is, no baggage. You know what I mean? Like the South Africans, apartheid, bad, easy,
good.
Crazy.
Put a target on them.
We'll take the guy with those gray eyes and we'll just make him the heavy.
And kind of a vague, indeterminable accent.
Right.
Like,
no.
He's foreign, but I don't know where.
None of me and my jack-off buddies in Valley Village could go, that's not a real authentic South African accent. Nobody knew what it was. Mm-hmm. It's like not quite Australian and not quite
Dutch,
English.
Yeah.
Patsy Kensit was in this?
Joe Pesci.
Was Joe Pesci introduced in this movie?
This was the first one. He's Leo Getz.
Leo Getz. Whatever you want, Leo Getz.
It's tough.
Like, fuck you at the drive-thru.
Had a lot of laughs, right?
I was young, but I remember this being an okay sequel. Or was it?
Yeah, it was.
Or was it?
I think it was pretty good. I feel like they just downgrade part twos a lot of the time, but Pesci was really funny in it, and I remember lots of laughs. Oh, okay. The critics couldn't have been that great to it, but it was fun. And I say they gave it 71.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
Yeah,
I crossed out 60 and went right down the middle at 50.
I went 52.
Lethal Weapon 2 is fresh at 83%.
High triple.
That was a short game for me.
Wow. This is why you got to play. Okay. You have to play.
Wait, did this get a better score than the original?
I think the original is a little bit higher. I think the original is in the high 80s.
People love this franchise.
Brian, I'm with you, though. Like, there's no way you think this thing is in the 80s.
No way. I guessed 50.
But the third one is where it starts to fall apart.
But the original is at 84.
84, damn. So just one. But I guess
this is the one with the toilet, right? With the toilet bomb?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
The Pesci comedy part of this, mm-hmm. I think, is what added a lot. All right, here we go.
All right, next up, 1990 film finds Bruce Willis returning to the role of John McClane, this time taking on terrorists who've taken over an airport. The movie is Die Hard 2.
Mm-hmm.
Die Harder.
Not
Rennie Harlan?
Did he do this
one? Returned to the first one.
Yeah, Rennie Harlan.
Mm.
Bonnie Bedelia's in this, too.
Yeah. People not so much on
Sipowicz.
This one. Not a bad
Dennis Franz.
Yeah, not a bad
Sadler.
Kind of fun, kind of interesting.
Bill Sadler's great in this
movie. Some interesting stuff going
John
on.
Amos too.
No reason to hate on this one, but I get the feeling like it was quite a departure from the first one in the quality department.
I agree with that. The scene with the grenades and he has the ejector seat on the ground. It's fucking brilliant.
Yes,
I'm just not buying scene. The full head of hair.
I'm going to say. Ooh, boy, these sequels, the genre with the, but part two, that's what really gives it the twist. Yeah, is it 44%? Is it 64%? I don't think it's above. Hey, I'm going to just land in the middle. I'm just going to go 54%.
This is either going to be my worst score ever, or I'm going to have to do some desperate say in the game. I said 78.
Whoa. I don't remember anything about this movie. I'm just doing a Hail Mary, 38.
Die Hard 2 is fresh at 69%.
Ooh, pretty good.
Hoping to get some more points out of that.
Mm-hmm. What'd you say, Brian?
78. Gina, you went 30?
38.
Wow.
I said 78. Damn it.
69. I liked it okay.
There's some good stuff in this movie.
Yeah, I agree. I just didn't think they'd be kind. All right.
All right. Next up, 1997 film directed by John DeBont finds Sandra Bullock returning to a role, her co-star didn't return, so she gets packed.
Cruise
up with
Control.
The movie is Speed 2 Cruise Control.
Wow, not since Jason Jaws has there been this kind of.
Willem Dafoe is the bad guy in this.
Yeah, he's on a cruise ship. Okay, this thing was a disaster. Now you get that thing where it's like. Are we going to single digits here, people? What are we doing here? Because it could be 31 or it could be 9. You do this thing where you go, well, come on, it had to be 25. But then you go,
9.
9. Maybe nine. Nope. Maybe it's 0. This thing was a disaster.
But how big of a disaster?
I feel like I'm protecting my lead here.
You got a hedge?
I got a hedge. I got to play. I'm playing in the middle. I'm going to go 17%.
Ooh. Fuck. I was hoping to pick up more points. This is like, I said 5. This is good. This is very bad.
Brian, you probably heard this episode of How Did This Get Made?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm basically basing it on this. I'm saying 14.
Speed 2 Cruise Control, one of the worst reviewed movies on the site. Rotten at 3%.
Damn it.
Oh. Wow.
Oh, you had 5?
I needed
bad.
Those extra 5 points.
Oh, man. I lost a lot.
No, you had a 25-point lead on me.
All right. What'd you do on there, Gina?
14.
14, all right.
All right, last one. 2003 film finds the late Paul Walker returning to a film that Vin Diesel didn't star in. Directed by John Singleton, the movie is Too Fast, Too Furious.
Mm-hmm.
No Vin in this.
No Vin in this.
Right. Mm.
Tyrese taking over the... Mm-hmm. Bald guy role.
Yeah, all right. This is, they always do that one. It's like, they're in Miami. You always know you're in Miami because you hear that over-the-top Miami music that plays every single time they're in Miami and a close-up of some chick shaking her caramel-colored ass. Like, we get it. We're in Miami.
Also the debut of Ludacris.
Ludacris, yeah. So he's in there, and of course the drug...
The drug lord always has to have the competition, like who can move my heroin the fastest. By the way, if I ever become a drug kingpin, the decree goes out, we only drive brown Camrys with cloth interiors, and we stay well below the posted speed limit. Yeah.
No,
you guys
sunroof.
Doing e-brakes and sliding through every intersection with day-glow colored cars with lots of graphics on it might draw attention.
The argument you made
from the popo. Now it is true the heroin is going to get to the dock a full 19 minutes later than it would have if you weren't drifting through every intersection, but it'll get there in one piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Without having the move where the cop pulls out the stiletto, sticks it into my bag of heroin, sniffs it, and goes, oh, yeah.
It's pure.
It's pure.
Right. You, you don't see the bandit putting the beer in the back of his car.
That's like a very good point.
He's the blocker.
The bandit was the
distracting the cops.
You're very, very right. Jerry Reed was the one who was minding his P's and Q's, and the bandit was out there as a rabbit. Okay. So this movie... I enjoyed
Smuggled 101 with Hal Needham.
I enjoyed more than I should probably admit. Lots of good talk. Lots of tough, rich drug lords going, I like your style. You remind me of a young me. You know, that stuff.
Sure.
All that going on. All right. They couldn't have liked it. It's got to be rotten. But now we're at that thing. Brian,
you would have to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory.
All right.
Friend.
Well, Brian, I get the feeling that Brian is his Hail Mary cannot be 44. His Hail Mary has to be 14. That's what I think. If he's going to try to make up 20 points, that's what he's got to go for. I got to play my defense and try to land in the middle somewhere. I am going to say 38%.
Shit. 24 is too close. I'll never make that up.
20.
Too Fast, Too Furious is rotten at 36%.
Wow.
Damn it.
Oh, you fucking swept this one.
Yeah.
This may be a first. I'm not sure, but Gina Grad 104.
I think I've been in triple digits before.
Have
Yeah.
Bald Brian 88 and Ace Man was 61. It was pretty close.
Hey,
there,
man.
Yeah, this
not a real red letter game for anybody.
No. No.
You're going to get a lot of tweets tomorrow.
Yeah, everybody's showing us
a lot of gloating
minus nine and stuff like that.
Single digits, dude.
Yeah, I get it. You're all better than we are. Matt Atchity, everyone. RottenTomatoes.com.
That was a Rotten Tomatoes game. How'd you do? Hope you played along. There's no way you remembered all the scores from the first time we played it back in March of 2016. I love that game. All right, that'll do it for Corolla Classics. I think that was a good episode.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. Played a lot of stuff. These were clips we haven't even played before, so hope everybody enjoyed it. We'll be back tomorrow, so make sure to tune in for that. All you got to do is subscribe to Corolla Classics, the podcast. It's a separate feed if you're listening to this on the Adam Carolla Show feed. And also, if you want to request a clip, just email us, classics@adamcarolla.com. Or you can find us on Instagram, @GiovanniGiorgio, @ChrisLoxamano1, Facebook. Just Google us. There's a way to get a hold of us. And let us know what you want to hear, because there's some things we forget, too. So thank you again for listening and spending the day with us, and we'll see you tomorrow. My name's Chris Loxamano. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo and get it on.
That episode of Corolla Classics is brought to you by Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And of course it's hard work, but you know what's easy, Gio?
Bundling all my insurance policies with Geico?
Wow. That's exactly right. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy, and it's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, see how much you could save. How easy is this?
It's Geico easy.
That's right. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Ready to get away from it all? Free yourself with Pluto TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah. Free. No contracts, no subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android or iPhone and start watching now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.